So today is March 23rd. We are at the Collier County Supervisor of Elections doing a transparency tour and interview with Supervisor of Election Jennifer Edwards.
I know, that's what I felt like that too.
You'll see these in a stored over in the off center. This is express vote. We're required to have one of these in every polling location, and that is for to meet the ADA requirements. So somebody that's visually impaired can use this to vote. These are the instructions. There's Braille on that, and then they have a headset, and they listen. And so anybody that has this kind of equipment, ESNS is our equipment, they're using express votes for their visually impaired voters.
Can I take a picture?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then this is called an EVID. It's an ID. It's a voter ID system. In the old days, we used the big books. And now it's electronic.
That's what we did.
Yeah.
You had to check the picture ID. It didn't have to be your license, the picture ID.
You have to have a picture. Yep. So these, this is what we use at the polling locations now. We have a program called Vote in Honor of a Veteran, and we have posters around the room that show examples from that. We have over 100 in that program now. And that's where we ask for just the veteran to complete a few questions and give us a picture. And we have that gallery on our website. And we go to a lot of veterans events and recruit members. There's probably some people on these walls you may know, like the tax collector. Former tax collector, Larry Ray. He was a helicopter pilot.
You see Wayne Smith anywhere, Michael?
He's in our
program.
He
should
be on one of
the
other Ray
St. Millie.
Who? He's Ray St. Millie. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
A few of them. Rick LaCastro's on there. We have family members.
We have God Bless America. Have to go over here, honey. Herb Savage.
Oh, my.
He helped with your Adopt a Precinct.
We didn't get out of any meeting until we sang
God Bless America.
Here's Wayne.
Yeah, he was one of our electors.
Yeah. Yeah. Wayne Smith?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wayne, and then there's also, I just think this picture is really cool of Jim Williams. He's a local Collier sheriff.
So when one goes to vote, how do they vote in honor of the veteran? Is it on the form?
That's cool.
No, it's just a concept that...
To promote getting out for other reasons. You know, a lot of people are like, I don't care to vote. Well, this is a great reason why you should care to get
That's
out
good.
And vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And all these pictures are on our website.
So you guys do training in here for poll workers?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many poll workers you guys had last election?
Oh, for the general, we probably trained 800.
Yeah.
This lady also is one of our training officers.
All right.
So we trained about 800, so we used...
It was similar to what we would normally train for our primary and general elections, but we were definitely working low because of COVID.
Yeah.
We definitely, I think we called them the skeleton crew, especially for that March and August election.
Yeah.
The general election, we had more PPE and were able to supply that, and people were feeling a little bit more comfortable, so it wasn't as bad. But we definitely struggled in the presidential primary and the August primary.
The COVID,
you
know, the COVID restrictions, would you guys say that that's kind of, you know, strengthened, you know, the integrity of the election? Has it weakened it at all, or has it not changed it at all? Any of the, you know, guidelines that they've sent down?
We had a little more challenge getting poll workers who weren't to come out and be in a group setting. We did things, of course, we had plenty of PPE product for our workers and for the public. But we actually put up the plexiglass shields at every polling location. We did a lot more protection. Mm-hmm. But we also had election workers that said, no, I'm going to pass this time. I don't want to get sick.
Yeah.
And we didn't have restrictions, so we couldn't put any kind of contingency on voters coming in to vote. So, for instance, you heard about Collier had their mask ordinances in place. We asked people to come in and wear a mask, but we couldn't require them to do that. Now, a lot of people did. Things were uncertain at that time. There was a lot we didn't know. But there was never a situation where anyone was kicked out for not wearing a mask or denied their right to vote to do that. So there really weren't any restrictions when it came to voting.
So our challenge was just getting people out to vote, out to work.
Yeah.
To work and to vote. But of course, there are three ways to vote. You can vote by mail, you can vote early, and you can vote on election day. Our volume of vote by mail just skyrocketed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The election day voting is decreasing and decreasing. We were up in DeSoto yesterday, and Mark was telling us that, you know, there was times where we sat here for over an hour and nobody even showed up, you know, because everybody, you know, took advantage of the early voting or mail-in voting and things like that. On election day, with, you know, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, you know, they generally send poll watchers and things like that. Are you guys familiar? Were they able to cover all the precincts, you know, with their, you know, poll watchers and things like that? Are you guys aware of that? Or were they like, oh, they maybe only had a half the precincts covered or anything?
I don't know what their plan was. The law says they shall submit the names of their poll watchers to us on X day before election day. And then the law says we shall approve those poll watchers. And what we do is we look through them, because if we have a problem with a poll watcher, we won't let them come back.
Okay.
Because there are strict rules in the law on how a poll watcher is supposed to behave. And they cannot interfere with the operations at a polling location.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the list, and generally, we approve all of them.
Yeah.
But then we have a deadline where we have to let them know they're approved. We make badges that they wear. They don't have their name on them, but it just says poll watcher.
Yeah.
And I think they always have some, and it's fine. I mean,
yeah. How about independents, you know, because third party, you know, observers aren't really allowed. So, I mean, what do you think about... There's a question on that page right there, Jamie, if you could help me out with
this. Have you had private third-party individuals or groups conducting voter registration activities in this county?
Yeah, well, that would be, you know, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, you know, maybe a civic organization, anything like that.
Well, I guess it's like yours. I mean, yeah.
As long as they're registered.
Yeah, third-party voter registrants have to be registered. Those that are obtaining voter registration application forms, they have to be registered with the state. And you know that.
Right.
That's a rule. And they have to have that number, and there's a procedure they go through when they deliver those voter registration applications to us. There's a deadline of X number of days that they have to turn them into us, plus now they have to make some statements to those that are registering and tell them they may want to bring them back to us. You can register somebody to vote and just tell them to drop off their voter registration form to us,
right?
Or
you can turn it,
and third parties don't even have to register.
But I think the question actually is, let me have one of those copies if
have
you don't
we
mind.
Had like a another group that you can recall is
NAACP, League of Women Voters. They do the registration. When it comes to poll watching, we really only see the Democrat and Republican Party. Now, during...
Well, I don't believe independents are allowed to observe. That's my question.
The Independent Party of Florida, they probably could.
Yeah. We have about 8 to 10 minor parties in Florida.
But if they're like an NPA group, the only way that they could be poll watchers is if they have an issue or a candidate on the ballot. Right. So, you know, candidate A for America can send a representative if they're on the ballot. Candidate B for Florida could send someone in there, but they can only send one
Party,
individual.
The Libertarian Party, those that are actual parties in the state.
they can have representatives here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the actual question reads like this. It says, if the legislator, through the Department of State, allowed independent, nonpartisan observers, would you guys, you know, welcome that?
In the polling room?
Right, you know, like additional poll watchers. So if the legislator, through the Department of State, allowed for independent, nonpartisan observers, would you guys be okay with that?
So what they're saying is if the legislature changes the law, it right. allows them. Of course.
Right.
We follow the law.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. Yeah. Since we're on this topic, I got like two more questions for it. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm learning a lot.
Yes, ma'am. It says, do you guys have you notified the local party chairs, that they are entitled to send observers to each, to your office?
Know.
Yeah, they know that.
Yeah, they know.
Do you guys have both Republicans and Democrat poll watchers at every polling location in 2020?
No, not at every one. I don't know the number, but. We had them, but not at every time.
Right. Okay. And the last one, it says, do you have a publication that you provide to your election officials regarding their rights and responsibility of poll watchers?
Yeah, it's in our voter guide.
Yeah. And it's in their training, in their manuals, and then also they receive a list from us of the people that were approved.
Awesome.
So,
what's your process of approving poll watchers? You said that you get a list and then... You generally approve them.
We ensure they're registered voters in our county.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And as I said, if we've had a problem with one, we'll say, no, they can't come back. But generally, we approve everybody.
Yeah.
And they can move around in the county. We don't say, you're approved for precinct 313, and that's the only place you can go.
Right.
We don't do that. They can move around.
Yeah.
But as Trish said, we give the list to our clerks. The clerk is the manager of the polling location. And the law says a poll watcher may only ask questions of the clerk. That's why I said they have to follow the rules.
Yeah.
And if they want to talk on the phone, they have to step outside. Just things to just manage the polling location.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can't cause an interruption of any kind in the polling place.
So they are allowed to step outside for a phone call. We couldn't even do that.
No, you can't.
Huh? Uh-uh. No. Well, I was a poll worker.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, we weren't allowed to step outside.
So she came to all the training, and we have a program called Adopt a Precinct. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-mm.
And that's
Rotary
what
Club.
It was her Rotary Club. We have different, generally civic organizations, and churches will adopt a precinct. They provide the workers. It's a win-win because then our staff is only reaching out to one representative, even though we're gonna have 10 or 12 people from that group working with us.
Yeah.
And then they come in, they do the same training that everybody else does. They don't even know if they're, sitting in this room, they won't know if they're adopt members sitting around them because everybody gets the same training.
Yeah.
But then the other win-win is we issue one check to that group. We don't issue a check, 10 or 12 checks. We
right.
issue one check to the group.
Right.
And they generally use that for scholarships.
Yeah, for all the workers that they send over.
Well, they get one check, it was $1,200,
mm-hmm.
and then they use that for a charity of some sort that they're doing.
That's cool. I'm glad you mentioned that because that was another question. How do you guys find poll workers?
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys like advertise in, the Naples Daily News or on your website or through third-party organizations, so I appreciate you saying that.
A lot of it's word of mouth. But also, and then through the adopt groups, we have about half of our precincts. Right now we've got 60. We're adding 6 new precincts because of growth this year. And
wow, 10% increase, huh?
And we're adding 2 new early voting locations. We had 9, now we're going to have 11. And we conduct a primary election for the parties. Right.
Yeah.
So they know they have somebody that's going to represent them on the general
Ticket.
Election ballot.
Yeah.
So it's a process. So.
Yeah. Awesome. Good stuff.
Let's go. Over here is another training room. I just want you to see this because.
Thanks.
like the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And we always have this backdrop because everybody that works in the election has an ID with their picture on it, mm-hmm. and they have to wear it.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that's an example of a plexiglass that we purchased for our workers for PPE during COVID, and we'll probably still use it.
Look at how old that sample ballot is.
What's that?
Look at how old that ballot is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Sample ballot.
From Barron Collier.
How do you think the machines are going? How's the ESS working for you?
Oh, it's good.
Is it?
Yeah. I was here. I came to office in 2000, in the July 1, 2000. So that was my first election, Bush v. Gore.
Oh, God.
That election lasted over 30 days. And after that election, the Florida legislature decertified the punch card ballot process, that equipment. So we had to find a new vendor. And so 2001 and part of 2002 was very exciting in the elections office in the election world in Florida,
yeah.
because there were probably 18 of us that had to buy new equipment. So we went with ES&S, Election System and Software, and there are about 18 to 20 other counties that use the same equipment. And then when Charlie Crist became governor, he had a law passed that said we couldn't use touchscreen because the first machines we bought were touchscreen. And he had a bill passed that said we had to transition to paper ballots. So we did that in 2008. So the Florida Division of Elections, which is a division under the umbrella of the Florida Secretary of State. Secretary of State is the highest election official in the state, in Florida and most other states. But I forgot where I was going with that train of thought.
Yeah.
But the Florida Division of Elections is mandated to certify equipment before we supervisors can even consider purchasing it. So there's a whole division or department within the Division of Elections that certifies the equipment, and any major changes to the equipment have to be certified by the Florida Division of Elections. And when that happens, the vendor, the ES&S, they don't send us that updated software.
That's with my question, the software versus the hardware.
Right. They have to, it has to be approved by the Florida Division of Elections, and then the Florida Division of Elections sends us the upgraded software.
How does that get installed or updated?
We'll show you that what we call the tabulation room, the tab room. That's where all the hardware and software resides for an election. And it's not connected to the internet. And we use the key access for everything here. And there are 24 of us that work here full time. And only 7 of us have access to that room. And that's the 5 IT workers. They're all men, by the way. The gentlemen, the guys, we call them. And my chief deputy is Melissa Blazier. She has access, and I have access. And it's a multi-factor access also, not just the key.
Okay.
And another.
So you said you don't use the internet. How are results then sent to state?
It's a portal that's been developed by the Florida Division of Elections, and we send the results through that secure portal. And then I like to add that once we do that, and the law says by 7:30 election night, we are mandated to send the results of early voting and vote by mail to the Florida Division of Elections and posted on our website by 7:30 election night. Those are preliminary results.
Voting's over by 8 or by 7?
7.
Well, the polls close at 7 unless there's lines. If there are lines, one of the election workers is instructed to go to the end of the line and announce the polls are officially closed, but everyone in line behind me can still vote.
That's fair.
Yeah. So we are required to send the results we had by 7:30. And then every 45 minutes after that, we have to send the updated results from the polling locations on election day.
Through the secure portal.
Well, that is done through a secure...
Virtual private network.
Virtual private network. Thank you.
Okay.
And yeah, and we do that. We test it. It's programmed. It's encrypted. And we test it a couple of times or more before election night. But the electronic equipment you'll see upstairs, it's programmed to know what it's going to get. And if what's transmitted doesn't look like it was programmed to receive, it rejects it.
I've known of two different organizations that have money stolen from them on an electric wire transfer. That's why I'm mm-hmm. asking.
Yeah.
Where they have the instructions of where to send it. It's on the way, and it just doesn't arrive.
Yeah,
somebody
that's
got
why,
in there and intercepted the instructions.
Yeah, that's why ours is programmed to prevent that, plus mm-hmm. we test.
Testing, and then you also have backups. So if there's anything nefarious that were to try and enter our system, mm-hmm. it would be denied. It would not be able to physically enter it. And then if there are any issues, we've got paper ballots. We have the equipment that it was run on, so the media, which we'll talk a little bit more over in the op center. And then there's also a tape that prints out so that we can compare those results and make mm-hmm. sure that
Okay, everything lines up.
So there's backups.
Good. I have a couple of questions on this topic while we're here. You know, how is the voting system in your county certified?
Florida Division of Elections.
Right. Do you know when it was last certified?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't, but you can go to the Florida Division of Elections website. They have a whole section on the equipment. It's probably there.
Okay. But that'll be like for the state, or would that tell us like the last time that your county was updated and certified?
It would be the last time they updated.
and they send that directly to you.
They send it from the Division of Elections, not the vendor.
Right. They send it to you, and your team goes in there and does that. Mm-hmm. So do you guys have access to the insides of the machine? Like if you opened it up?
If we needed to open it up, we could open it up, but we generally don't because the vendor comes in every year and does their maintenance on the equipment.
Okay.
We have a...
How do they do that maintenance? How do they update it if it's not connected to the internet?
They don't update the software. They're working on a piece of equipment. So it would be like somebody coming to repair your dishwasher.
Right. Does anybody monitor them while they have that machine open? Are you the one or someone on your staff? Your staff does?
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
We have a relationship too. It's not just like ESNS that we work with. There's an actual specific person who we have a relationship with that comes in. So it's not like they're sending some random person like, hey, this is Joe Smith, he's our new IT guy. Like usually there's an introduction, there's a process where they'll come in, they'll probably meet with William, who you'll meet over on the other end. But we have a relationship actually with all of our vendors. So mm-hmm. we know exactly who is touching our equipment, what exactly they're doing with it, so on and so forth.
Cool.
And we have an inventory software. It's called
Asset Shadow.
And every time a piece of equipment is touched, it's recorded.
Do you guys invite like the county chairs or, you know, any observers to, you know, witness any updates or calibrations or?
Every election jurisdiction in the country has a canvassing board. And the canvassing board in Florida is made up of a county judge, that's the chair, and a county commissioner. And this year it's gonna be the chair of the county commission, Bill McDaniel, and myself.
Right.
And the three of us have specific mandated roles. And one of the first things we do, I call it the kickoff, is we have a public test of the voting equipment.
That the public's invited to see?
Public's invited, we advertise. We're under the sunshine, just like the Board of County Commissioners or City Council. We work under the sunshine. So we post the dates of all the canvassing board meetings, and the public is welcome. We want the public to come. Yeah. We always have representatives from the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, and the League of Women Voters. And they come and observe everything we do, and it's a public test. It's called the logic and accuracy test.
Yep.
And we vote a predetermined ballot deck. We're using the same ballots that are going to be used on election day, and we have a sample of those that we test from that will be used in early voting, vote by mail, and election day. For early voting, we have what's called ballot on demand. What that means is we have printers in every early voting location, because you may decide you're not going to vote on Marco. You're going to go down to Everglades City and have a nice lunch and vote down there at an early voting
location. I don't have to show up at my voting location anymore?
Not for early voting.
Okay, for early voting.
If you vote on election day, yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yeah.
But if you go to any of the 11 early voting locations, we will print your ballot style. In a primary, we have over 300 different ballot styles. In a general, we have over 100. We have over 40 different districts in this county. So that's why it's important that we know where you live.
Yeah.
Because we need to know the
districts. Mosquito control districts.
Right. Fire districts,
yeah.
Community development districts. There's going to be an item on the primary ballot for Hideaway. It just depends on where you live. That's why we need to know where you live. But that's one of the main roles of the canvassing board, is to publicly test the equipment. And oh, by the way, we're all going to a training meeting next week. Everybody that is part of the canvassing board process has to go to training next week in Orlando. And
it's statewide, the canvassing board is statewide?
Yeah, the judges come, the commissioners come.
Yeah.
Some of our staff will go with us. The ones that touch the ballots, have anything to do with the ballots, review the signatures. They teach us and train us every election cycle on signature verification, you know, so loops above the line, below the line,
All
that kind of stuff. Well, that's part of our training.
Who trains that? Is that the state that trains you guys, or do they have the vendors there?
No, we don't have the vendors there for that. It's usually a forensic signature authority who usually serves a purpose if there's a criminal trial.
Right.
They're the ones that are explaining the signatures and stuff. So it's, you know, it's good training.
Yeah.
And we also get that, a video of that, so that if somebody was unable to attend the training next week, they'll sit here and watch that video.
Right, from your office?
From our office.
Yeah. Is that available to the public to watch as well?
No.
Yeah.
I don't know if it could be, probably, but
you'd probably have to request it from the division.
Yeah, Florida Division of Elections.
Right. How many, since we're talking, you know, polling locations, how many extra ballots do you guys have at each location?
Well, at early voting, we print it, and we send the paper. We order it from our vendor also, special paper. And they package it usually in packages of 100, and we deliver, and we reconcile everything we send out to the polling locations. So for election day, we have printed ballots, and we order the ballots based on how many
people
are registered at that precinct.
But you have additional ones, you know, provisionals or, you know, so on and so forth.
Well, and we had to count what was left over.
That's right. We reconcile everything.
Well, yeah. I'm glad you said that, because that was my next question. How do you guys track those additional ballots that might just be sitting there?
They're reconciled. When on Monday before Election Day, the clerk comes back to our ops center, and they pick up their ballots for Election Day, and they're sealed in boxes with numbered seal, and then they go in another canvas bag that's sealed, and all of those seals are recorded on a chain of custody form,
mm-hmm.
and they have to count how many ballots are taken. That's written on that form. And at the end of every day, at early voting, and at the end of election day, there's another reconciliation form. So that has to include how many ballots to start with, and they have to be accountable to end up with how many, does that equal how many ballots I have today?
Right.
That would include they'd be reconciling with spoiled ballots, provisional ballots. Provisional ballot is the same ballot everybody votes. It just isn't tabulated at the polling location.
Right.
It goes into a special envelope that has an oath on it that both the voter and the election worker has to fill out.
And that person who's voting provisional, they have to be able to, you know, maybe come back and, you know, provide proof that who they are or where they live and something like that, right?
We give them a page of information that tells them what they need to do. They have to come to our office and determine, share with us their eligibility to vote. And they have to do that by 5 o'clock Thursday, 2 days after Election Day, or during early voting. We give them that same, they can still, if they voted early, they still have to have their eligibility proved to us by Thursday after Election Day.
The general election day.
Mm-hmm. Well, in primary general, yeah, election day.
Right.
And generally, what we find is people that have to vote provisional ballots just didn't bring their ID. Mm-hmm. And so we tell them, if you didn't have your ID, and we can ensure that the signature on the back of this provisional ballot envelope matches your signature record, then you don't have to come to our office. We can determine your eligibility that way.
Through verifying their signatures?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's similar to like the vote by mail process.
Right.
We would verify it a similar way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And during early voting, they'll just come in every day. And during early voting, we have a contract with a security company that goes to every early voting location at the end of every day and picks up the voted ballots and the reconciliation forms and comes back to us through a security company. That security company calls us during the day and says, this is the name of the person that will be going to Immokalee or going to Market, going to Everglades City. And we call the clerk then and we say, so-and-so will be there with their identification to pick up the ballots, ensure that's who's there. And then we have staff waiting at the operations center for the security guards in the evening, and they go through all that paperwork, make sure everything's right. The seals have not been tampered with because the clerk at the early voting location puts a seal on the bag that the ballots are in. And so our staff confirms that the seal hasn't been tampered with and it's accurate.
Are the voting machines, have you guys ever experienced like any issues with them, you know, like just not working?
Well, off the top of my head, yes, but it's things like the paper trail gets jammed.
Okay.
Yeah,
there's nothing like internally or nothing. It's kind of just, you know, an easy fix or something like that.
Yeah, it's an easy fix, but we always have an alternate out there.
Machine,
yeah.
Gotcha. Do you, you
we
know,
back up everything.
Yeah, you know, back to, you know, the hanging chads, you know, back from 2000 and all that stuff, you know, we hand counted, you know, votes and things like that over, you know, past 20 years it's gone to the machines and stuff. Do you think...
We didn't hand count with punch cards.
Well, what I meant was with the hanging chads and doing
the
it that
chads,
way.
The hanging chads was a
the
reader.
Voting.
It was a card reader.
Right.
An IBM card reader. And so if we had a recount...
Manual
we
recount.
We put them back... We just had recounts back then.
Right.
And we put them back through the readers. And if the voter didn't punch that chad completely out, it would waver. It might fill that hole back up. So we always knew the results would never be the same.
Right.
There was a small margin of difference.
Have you ever seen any fractional votes come from the machine?
Well, I don't know what you mean by that.
Well, you know, like, I don't know, 80.7 people voted or, you know, ballots or anything like that? Okay.
Yeah, we have to reconcile the number of ballots and report that to the division as well. Like, we do that for our manual audit at the end of an election.
And there's a, it looks like a cash register tape. You probably remember that from working. Mm-hmm. They're trained to print that before the polls open at 7 a.m. And that will show zero ballots voted.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the day, they're instructed to print two of those. But, and those have to come back to us, because that's part of the cross-checking and control, because they mowed them from a polling location after the polls close on election night, and they print those tapes. And they also have a medium that the votes are on. So that's three different ways that the votes, the results have come to us, and we cross-check every one of those at on Wednesday morning after election.
What's your biggest concern going into 2022 primary
building
midterms?
Building confidence in what we're doing? You know, I've been doing this over 20 years.
Yeah.
I'm not a cheater. I take an oath every year. Every staff member takes an oath every year to uphold the U.S. Constitution, the Florida Constitution, and the Florida law, election laws. And every elected official in the state of Florida has to take a four-hour ethics training every year.
Mm-hmm.
So we take great pride in what we do. And when somebody says, you know, I think you cheated, it's an affront to me. Because I take great pride, and my staff has the same pride in what we do to provide a very important service to our community.
Yeah. You guys do a good job. You guys are the most transparent, you know, office I've seen, you know, since I've been going and doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions while we're seeing
you? I have to ask. Can you turn that off for a minute
while I'll step outside because I'll turn it off. It's going to mess us up. We're doing a tour with another person, and that other person's in there asking a question regarding political. So I wanted to step out. I don't really care about being political. We're here just to learn and ask some questions. We're going to go take a walk here in a second over to another building where they conduct the vote, and also upstairs on the second floor we're going to go actually take a look at the machines. And today is Wednesday, March 23rd. We started at 10 a.m. this morning, and we're taking a tour of the Collier County Supervisor of Elections facility, and also interviewing Jennifer Edwards, the Collier County Supervisor of Election. They're still inside discussing their question. Again, it was a political question or statement, and I didn't feel we needed to hear it because we're not really concerned with partisan issues. Cool. Do you guys know how much it costs, like, per voter, you know, to put on an election?
It costs between $700,000 and $800,000 to conduct a countywide election, so divide that by the number of voters.
Okay.
And it depends, yeah, it's not affected by voters. We spend the same amount on the election, which is why we're always pushing voters to turn out, because whether it's a 30% turnout or a 90% turnout, we're on average spending the same amount.
You have to be prepared.
Yeah.
So we want people to vote in a primary. It's sad when less than 40% of our voters vote in a primary election. This is the first year I've seen candidates file to run for public office 7-8 months before a primary election. I've never seen this before. And so everywhere I go to speak, I say, please remember to vote in the primary.
Why is that so important? I'm asking an uneducated
The purpose of a primary election is for the parties to determine who's going to face off for them in the general.
Right.
So do you want just 30% of the people to pick the candidate that's going to run against the opposing party in the general election? Also, we have nonpartisan races that are very important, and we've never seen as many school board candidates as we have right now. There are 3 school board seats up and 2 county commission seats up, and they all have a lot of candidates already.
Oh.
Now, you can only vote for the county commissioner that's running in the district in which you live. So
they're single member districts?
Single member districts. And your county commissioner is not up this year. He'll be up in 2024. Do you all know whether or not your county?
Yeah, they're countywide. They're not single
right,
member districts. Yeah, we're in Lee County.
Right.
Yeah.
So ours are individual districts, but school board's not. So you have to run by district, but everybody across the county can vote for school board. So our school board member's up this time. That's Jory.
Yeah.
She's up. She's got at least two people opposing her.
Okay.
So that's why it's important to vote in the primary.
You got me. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry, I got one question here I skipped over. It says, you know, concerns were raised across the country about the accuracy and the integrity of the voting machines in 2020, and there are now calls to get rid of machines and use a manual process like that they use in France. Do you think it's a good idea to go back to manual voting?
Manual counting,
I'm sorry. No. If not, why?
Because there's more errors in manual counting than there would be in the machines.
Yeah.
And when do you want the results?
Well,
you
I don't know.
The results at 7:30, don't you?
Well, I would much rather just see them actually be done right than actually be done just to get them done. Personally, I know most people are like that, you know.
I had an ongoing argument with a local journalist who's no longer working for the newspaper, but I would say I want accuracy over speed, and he would say, "Well, we want both."
I don't know. Yeah. I think getting it right is the most important, you know.
So but. No, I don't think manual counting. And if, as Trish said, we're mandated to do an audit after every election, and it's a randomly selected race on the ballot in a randomly selected precinct, and the county judge makes that random selection. We draw out of a bag. We have little cards made for every candidate, every issue on the ballot, and then once that's been selected, then we have a little card for every precinct, goes in the bag, and the judge selects that. And then our staff, we have to find every ballot that was voted to meet those requirements. And then at an advertised public meeting, we do a manual count. So that's our audit.
Yep.
And Trish has done it before. Have you ever made a mistake?
Yeah. I've made, it's very nerve-wracking counting, because you're not, and we're only counting one race. When you look at your ballot, you've got 20 or more races on there. To count every single one of those races would be extremely daunting. And then you could create a whole new set of theories about who was hired to count these ballots. is there a political motivation behind that in the select, in the counting of the ballots? So there's all the, you know, machine doesn't know any better. The machine isn't Republican or Democrat, and has a very low error rate and is easily tracked how it counted things. I mean, we have information that we can actually collect the data off of the machine to show what was counted and how it was counted in what way. With a human, you really can't do that. But
yeah, you just have to go back and recount it again.
And again, and again. And we do that in recounts. Were you here in 2018 in Florida?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I was born and raised here.
So you probably paid attention to the 2018 recount. It was a process, and it was extremely expensive, and it was a whole operation. And we had staff here from 7 a.m. until 11 p.m. Mm-hmm. counting ballots for the recount. And that was, you know, we started off with the machine recount, which took a lot of time to refeed those. And then we had it, because it was so close, we had to do another count manually. So there are statutory requirements of us where if there's a close race, we have to do that. But those are only a few races on the ballot, the entire ballot.
Right.
So
yeah, we had three recounts in 2018, three statewide and one local. So we had four.
Yeah, we had a judge.
Uh-huh.
But if you think you counted those votes at the precinct level, do you think it would be quicker than, like, you know, trying to, you know, like a big manual recount, you know, like a runoff or whatever? You know, that's obviously a little bit different. But if you had enough people at the precincts themselves, the poll workers, you know, counting.
Who are you going to trust?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, some people don't trust machines. You know, some people don't, you know, trust people being able to count properly. There's never a perfect system. I mean, I think we could probably all agree with that. You know, there's going to be errors in everything.
If people want to recount the 2020 election, they can come here and sit, and we will show them every ballot.
Wow.
We did that after the 2000 election. There was a consortium of newspapers that went to different counties and did that.
Is that right?
Yeah. We had a staff person that said, because only the election workers can touch the ballots. So he sat there for hours on end. He'd hold it up and they had their little forms. And they never found anything wrong.
But
it could be done here. You can still do that.
It's
ballots.
Tedious.
We're required to keep every thing connected with an election for 2 years.
Yeah, 22 months I've learned, isn't it?
Yeah. So we, I think there's a federal requirement for 2 years. We just keep everything as long as we are required to do it. And then we have people that are actually certified in records retention, which is a whole other set of laws.
Right.
And they manage that for us.
That's cool. Yeah. I feel like I'm holding this up. I'm sorry.
I'm learning so much.
There's a lot of detail.
Yeah, there is.
Which usually causes a lot of questions.
Well, you know, a lot of, you know, folks have gotten, you know, interested in, you know, the election process over the past 8 years. Well, 20 years, really. I mean, you take it back, especially here in Florida, to the Jeb Bush and Al Gore. You know, and in 2016, you know, Democrats say, oh, no, this isn't right. Now 2020, the Republicans say, oh, no, this isn't right. Uh-huh. It was like a vicious cycle, really.
Thank you. We're going to head over to our ops center over there just to show you the equipment and introduce you to our staff who manages it.